to Malkier Talks, a Wheel of Time theory podcast. I am Rob, your host, and today we are getting back to it with Noel, going through the Eye of the World, chapter 28 and maybe even 29 today. How are you doing, Noel?
I'm alive.
That's your common answer when I ask that question. I'm alive.
It's true. I suppose I am better than the last time we recorded in that I don't feel quite as bad, but I'm still full of the COVID, which is great.
Yeah. For folks listening, I know it's on release. This is probably a couple of weeks apart from when you last heard Null. But for us, it's only a couple of days because Null is off this week, and we decided to take advantage of that and record twice. So it's been a couple of days for us, but it might be a couple of weeks for you. So that's why he still has COVID, not that he's got some sort of super long-lasting version.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
If I speak to you in 2 weeks and you've still got COVID, mate, like, I'm calling a doctor on your behalf, seriously.
Yeah.
But no, it's good that you're improving. I'm glad to hear that, mate. So it's a shame you can't be outside enjoying the somewhat sunny at times weather today. I don't know what it's like over for you, but the sun comes and goes here.
Grey.
Okay. I see some grey clouds, but
out of the window, it just looks grey.
No, I can see a mix of grey clouds and blue sky. So, I'm getting like flashes of sunlight. It was very nice this morning when I got up. It was 11, but when I got up, it was beautiful outside. So yeah, there's been some nice weather around. Hopefully more good weather's on the way, because we like good weather. Especially you. You garden so much, it's mad.
Yeah, I haven't done anything this year. It's terrible.
Seriously? You were sending me... I remember during lockdowns, you were doing so much. You were like putting farmers to shame, basically.
Well, it just not really happened yet. I mean, there's still time.
There is still time. You're quite right, yes. So I'm going to dabble on a few things this year myself, but I need to get out and I need to fix the garden because... It's like moss is trying to take over the garden, and I got out a huge patch last year, but I need to dig up about half the grass or half the moss this year. Yeah. Half the garden is moss. I'll clarify that and try to reseed it. So it's going to be fun, but yeah, enough of the garden talk. I've got no special announcements this week, no new patrons, but as always, go join us for Malkyrie Con. If you're interested in the UK, you can... Find that at malkyrietalks.com/malkyriecon, as well as all of the other things I do. But we're just going to dive straight into the recordings. And we're on chapter 28. We're with Nynaeve, Lan, and Moraine here, and they have arrived in Whitebridge. So
yeah, they're a little bit behind the others, aren't they, by the sounds of it?
They are, which doesn't surprise me. I mean, the others are on a boat. They run horses.
Yeah. Cheating, really.
they're, so if this were a game of snakes and ladders, Matt and Rand have taken a ladder, and the others are snaking along. I don't know, probably not snaking along, but just going along, but playing the board correctly. Not that ladders is correct, but anyway. Chutes and ladders, is it, in America, isn't it, I think?
Oh, that's above my pay grade.
Nice. But they've turned up at Whitebridge, and they've had no conversation. So it sounds like it's not been the most fun of journeys. But we get Nynaeve thinking about, I could be an Aes Sedai if I go to Tarvalon. What can I do with the one power of, a wisdom with the one power? That would be pretty awesome. But as soon as her thoughts turn, or thoughts begin, her hatred for the one power burns the thoughts away. So she's pretty torn on that situation, it seems to be. Also she's frustrated at Moraine because she's not giving any information away. So she's a bit frustrated here. She's not enjoying this.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of that is Moraine on purpose just sort of annoying her.
Do you think it's a deliberate thing?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Not necessarily as like, yeah, screw you, but as I know this annoys you until you actually start talking to me properly.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
Moraine's made a few attempts to have conversations, hasn't she? And he becomes very not rude, but she's closed off.
Yeah, closed off is a good choice there. So, and it's not just Moraine bugging her, but Lan's getting under her skin a bit as well. He's not really saying anything. Doesn't join in on their quote discussions. He's, scouting away and stuff. But when he is with them, he stands off to one side like they're having a duel. And all of this is driving Nynaeve mad because she thinks she hasn't scored, and Moraine doesn't seem to know she's in a fight. So it must be a fun scenario there, I think. But despite what we see, Moraine and Lan they're struggling. Like the constant quiet is them just winding themselves tighter and tighter. Moraine's listening, things aren't there. Lan's watching the land around like he's constantly expecting a trap and ambushes. But when Nynaeve asks, it's like, nope, it's nothing. But then in the same breath, it's like, you should return to the Two Rivers. It's dangerous. So it's an interesting sort of mix that's going on there. Like everyone's got, dealing with stuff in their journey. And then there's a comment here. Moraine tells them Nynaeve is part of the pattern. It is the Dark One. He is watching, not us, but the world. How much longer before he is strong enough to? And then that's kind of just where she leaves it. And this is like, to do what? So, and then, yeah. It's any idea to do what? You've got any thoughts there, maybe?
No. No, I don't know. And what's annoying is because I suspect that you do know. Well, I think you know.
Me?
Yeah.
You mean?
Yeah, you.
Oh, well, I mean, I've read the series, so of course I know.
I'm glad it's addressed.
You get an idea of what the Dark One's up to eventually. That crops up occasionally, I'm sure. But they head over the bridge, freaking Nynaeve out because it's a pretty thin looking bridge and it looks like glass, but she gets on and everything's fine. But when they get across, there's like a smell of char in the air. There's tendrils of smoke from around the central square. Guards are everywhere, looking over the shoulders and stuff. And shit's gone down in this town. So, how close behind the boys do you think they are?
I think when I was reading this, I kind of assumed it was the day after.
Okay.
Not for any specific reason, but it's got to be reasonably close in time because the smoke. Like I'm assuming something monumental happened afterwards. And more than a day or two after that, any last embers of whatever would have died off, surely.
Yeah.
So it's either that day or the day after.
Well, we're
I'm
getting a
trying.
bit. Sorry, go.
I was just going to say, I'm trying to think. There wasn't really a mention of time, was there,
Not really, no.
when the boys were walking around? It was daylight. Definitely wasn't evening because the innkeeper was on about them staying for the day and then performing that evening.
Yeah. Yeah, they.
Uh,
Sorry, I keep talking over you there.
no, no, it's fine. But and I think from the sounds of this, it's kind of daylight. There's no mention of it being dark, so yeah, I would hazard that it's the next day.
Cool. They're asking, well, Moraine's asking around, displaying a bit of concern, people, but they're getting like mixed responses. So some people are like, there's no trouble, nothing's wrong. And someone's like, oh, someone overturned a lamp and caused a fire. And then the women are saying there's a man who's been messing with the One Power. And they're getting sort of mixed messages about what's happened. So obviously that leaves them a bit dubious. They head into an inn, divided by a shoulder height wall. And what wait, I've lost myself here. They enter an inn, its square room divided by a shoulder high wall, paused, feeling the air of a hand, and smiled, but wouldn't say anything on it. Okay, so this is Moraine. There we are. Sorry. This is me talking through the notes without actually pre-reading them. So they stop and have some lunch here, and we get a bunch of soldiers rock in. Yeah, we get Nynaeve thinking, oh, that looks like Senbui type of person. The soldiers come over, see them, and demanding who they are, and what business they have, and how long they plan on staying. And Lan's like, basically, we're going to go as soon as I finish this drink. Having just read that, have you seen Kingsman?
No.
No? Okay, there's a scene in there with Colin Firth, and a bunch of guys turn up to beat Eggsy, which is the character played by Taron Egerton, and he's just like, do you mind give us a second? I want to finish this pint of Guinness. And they're like, you should leave, mate. And then he's like, gets up and basically beats the shit into them, and sits down and finishes his pint and goes, now we can go. I've just got an image of that. but he does add, the light lumen, good queen, more gaze. And you've put notes here like, who is this? Any thoughts on who the gaze might be?
No. No, and I think that's why that who do what now is still still relevant to this day. Not a clue.
Yeah.
It's the first mention of any sort of queen, I think.
Yeah, really. It's our first, getting specific with names and stuff of a queen. Yeah. Royalty has been mentioned very vaguely at places, but nothing with any detail.
Yeah, and I don't... Up until... Well, even still later on, I don't think I'm really aware of the... social society structure, if you like.
Right, yeah.
Well, there's obviously these groups like the Aes Sedai and stuff that the White Cloaks and things like that that operate within the realm.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really know what their hierarchy is, as in, well, now I'm assuming there's a queen, but as to who she is a queen of. Yeah. Is she a queen of this land? Those things I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough. The soldier is basically just, after hearing this, is basically like, yeah, go on then, finish it and then do leave. There's too many strangers around, for the good of the queen's peace, before he stomps off. And Nynaeve's like, what are we going to do now? Like, in essence saying we've lost everybody. Moraine says, we're going to go after the one she can easily track to the north. She can sense that two of them were here. She can sense their fear, but they left alive and cannot tell which direction they went as they don't have the coins. And they have to trust that they have headed to Camelot now. And then obviously Lan points out that they had reason to be afraid because there was a halfman here, which is the Murdral. So,
yeah.
So they're picking it. Did you expect them to be able to sort of pick up this much? Because obviously we know what happened here. It was in one of the previous chapters. But, they've just turned up and basically gone to a pub, sat down, had some lunch. And I was like, oh, well, they were both here. They're both alive. And they both left alive. I don't know which way. And Lan's like, oh, but there was a Murdral here as well. So they should have been afraid. And, were you surprised at how much information they picked up from just having lunch in the area?
Yes, I was. And I was expecting there to be some sort of information gathering, like sort of what Moraine was doing at the beginning when they first rock up, and she's asking questions and trying to make sure everyone's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But more of a information dump that way, rather than I didn't expect that. I know they've been here. I can feel it, sort of thing. I remember at the time thinking, oh, it's strange that she's picked up on that, but not on, there's no mention of Tom.
Yeah. This is very true. Yes, it does only talk about the two boys.
Yeah,
two,
there's no
two
like.
Of them. I mean.
Yeah, I was waiting for some sort of news of Tom, and you don't get any.
So I have to ask. Obviously, you're suggesting that at the end of the last recording, you said Tom is alive and he comes back at the beginning of book two. Although potentially we see him later in book one, I don't realize it's him. In essence, Tom, going by that logic, must have already left Whitebridge. Or is he hiding somewhere and we're just not concerned about him?
I don't bloody know. although, he's specified to the boys a inn, hasn't he?
He has, the Queen's Blessing.
So he, in theory, knows where they're going. So... See, I can't picture, and like the way he reacted in that fight, you know, like throwing his stuff to them, mm-hmm. shouting run, and then pulling his daggers out and just going for it, was not the character I expected. So part of me is that I don't expect him to have stuck around. If he could have made his escape, he would have done. He was operated on trying to make a distraction in order to save the boy's life, to redeem, you know, this memory he has. But also because that was such a strange way for him to act in my head, maybe he did stick around. I just kind of assumed that he'd bugger off and actually is making his way to Camelin as well.
Yeah, your initial in the thoughts section for chapter 28, you've initially put here that there's no sign of Tom, and the fact that there was no mention of his death makes you think he escaped, and the talk of a mob heading after a boat suggests that maybe he escaped with Captain Doman and that we shall see him again. So yeah, sounds like you're on the track of he did scarper away before they got there, but you use it as a distraction. Interesting idea. We'll have to see if that's true. If we ever meet Tom again.
When?
Okay. If you say so. So yeah, and that's kind of the chapter sort of ends there. They finish up the meal. They leave Whitebridge and they head towards the northeastern horizon. It's not a very long chapter, which is good, because chapter 29 there's going to be a lot to unpack there, I think. But your main points for chapter 28, all around Moraine, a lot. So why is Moraine not more open with Nynaeve? And you've questioned, would it curb her incessant demands for information? Or is that why she doesn't? Because it's going to be very time consuming and it'll just probably add more questions. I like that.
Yeah, I think when I was actually reading that, obviously my notes don't really go into it too much, but there was a lot at the beginning of it, wasn't there, where it talks about how she's constantly trying to get something out of them. She wants some sort of information. And Moraine just refuses to answer.
Yeah.
And I couldn't work out whether why doesn't she just go, you know, okay, this is actually what I think or what I know. And I thought, oh, you know, is she doing it because she just, you know, she doesn't want to tell her because, I don't know, she finds her annoying and can't be bothered to engage or whatever, or because she's not accepted her offer. Mm-hmm. Or is it actually that she's have it to explain it opens it up to more questions that she doesn't want to answer anyway.
Right.
So she just chooses to just ignore her completely.
Yeah, it's possible. So do you think she's ever going to get answers, or is Nynaeve just going to have to work them out as she goes?
It has probably do Nynaeve some good to work them out as she goes.
Nice. Okay. I like it. And in regards to heading north and stuff, you're questioning how long before they see each other again. So obviously,
I'm just,
you're suggesting they are all going to meet back up, obviously, then?
Well, So I'm now questioning my response that this is a day after, because I've now experienced some of the travel that the boys have done on their way. And it doesn't, to me, sound very quick.
Right.
You know, there are some, they get a lot of lifts off people and sort of shuffle their way around, but they also stop at quite a few places and work for bed and board sort of thing. If it was the day after, why haven't Moraine and Lang caught up?
Right, yeah. That's well, you know, maybe I don't know. I don't want to say anything. I feel like I'm going to give away if I start saying things.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Like, we, as each chapter progresses, we learn a little more, but reading this back, that should be the obvious question here is like, oh, okay, why haven't they caught up?
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe it was a couple of days. Maybe the smoke has lingered. Maybe it took a while to put the fire out. Who knows?
True. And why was the fire started? Was it actually a lantern that was knocked over, but was it knocked over in the scuffle or the ensuing panic, as you know, this dark cloaked figure that makes people scared and not want to get close
Yeah.
is in a battle with a what did we call him last time? Jason Donovan.
Yes, yeah, Jason Donovan, yeah. In his Technicolor Dreamcoat. I like it. You think Moraine's making the sensible decision by going north, though?
Yes, because the she's just following who she knows she can follow, isn't she? It's like the argument they had a while ago was, oh, you know, following so and so or this way or that, and it's like, well, I don't know where this per I know where this person is, or I know where this person was, and I can follow the person when I know where they are. I can't predict the unknown sort of thing. So it's better to go with what you do know. So she's just tracking. If she can track one person, it's better to find them than to find nobody.
That is true. Yeah, we know how close she is to Random Map, but obviously she doesn't know that. So, yeah. Fair point, fair point. And you're curious about, you know, the longer journey that Random Map are looking like they're having, how the changes to Map will manifest themselves as they continue through that journey, and how they're having to rely on each other. So, do you have any thoughts on what might happen to Map with this longer time? Stuck. I mean, does this mean that you think that, you know, if they bumped into Moraine, she would fix his issues with a dagger instantly, or?
I don't know. I suppose the question is, would she notice that something's different, or
Okay.
would she detect that he's holding something that is, you know, cursed or whatever it is? I would like to think she would be able to tell, but I don't know. I would assume that when they eventually meet up, it'll be obvious that something is wrong.
Yeah. One would hope. So, I
I
mean.
wonder if he tries to run off.
Oh, from Rand, you mean?
No, from you know, if Rain and everyone else all sort of come back together, whether Matt will try and slip out of the way, sort of thing.
All right, okay. I understand what you're saying now. Interesting. We will have to wait and see. So, but I mean, in regards to her noticing, you said that Rand appears to be starting to notice.
Where he's, yeah, like I said last time, you know, I don't really think that's true actually, but he's aware that something's, he can't figure out what it is and keeps assuming that it's just the fatigue of what's going on.
Yeah.
The question there is if a person with some sort of magical abilities is able to detect the evil that's sort of lingering. And if not, then she might not notice anything, because if Rand is only really just sort of going, oh, well, his character seems to have changed slightly,
Yeah.
is someone that doesn't really know him going to notice anything at all? Probably not.
Yeah, fair. So, well, we do get a lot of time with Rand and Matt further along, so I'm sure we'll be able to dive more into that when we get there. Is there anything for chapter 28 that we haven't talked about you want to mention?
I feel like that's a leading question, and
No, genuinely, because it's a
good.
short chapter, and we've spent like, 25 minutes rather than like 45 minutes on it. I just want to make sure we hadn't skipped anything you wanted to talk about, so.
No, I think actually it was brief, wasn't it? The main points are they've arrived at some point relatively recently after the boys have left, and there is obviously some carnage left over from the ensuing fight that Tom and his Fade had. But for some reason, people weren't very forthcoming with what's happened. That's the only other thing that I found interesting was the reaction, the kind of trying to hide that anything had happened.
Right, yeah.
And I couldn't really work out what the reason behind that was, whether it was fear or somebody telling them not to say anything.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that was the only other thing, but I don't think that was really as important at the moment.
No, fair enough. Okay, we'll move on to chapter 29. Now this is a heavy chapter. This is probably one of the heaviest chapters we've had so far, I would say. It's always quite a chapter when we go through it, when I do a reread. So this is Eyes Without Pity, and we're with Elias, Egwene, and Perrin. And previously we were pretty chilled with this trio. Like, they were taking it easy with the tinkers, dancing, partying, flirting, and now we are rushing everywhere. Like, Elias is like setting a quick pace, heading southward, and like, you can only have a fire if there's deadwood on the ground. We're digging pits, hiding it instantly. We're being very meticulous about leaving no trace after they've camped. And the wolves are picking up on Elias's worry, and they're scouting as though danger is at their heels or waited just over the next rise. So this is quite a sort of a pacey chapter as well. And so when you started reading this, what were you, how did you feel? What did you think was going on?
Well, so I put there whatever Rael and Elias were worried about is enough to hasten his step. It just got me thinking about their sort of hushed conversation.
Right.
What is it that they're both suddenly seeing that's what's caused that immediate panic? And it's got to tie in with Perrin's sort of nightmare, perhaps because Elias felt those shared feelings through the wolves.
Gotcha.
It's got him real worried because, one of his wolves was turned into flame in the dream.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So you
probably shouldn't.
do you think he's
Sorry, go on.
sense oh, sorry, do you think he sensed the dream or experienced part of the dream? Like, do you think he's getting it like secondhand from the wolves or something, perhaps?
I think he kind of, in whatever language they use through imagery or senses, he has had it relayed to him.
And he's taking it very seriously, clearly.
Because I'd hazard that he probably puts a lot of trust and faith and belief in the wolves as his sort of tribe.
Right. Well, despite it being a pacey and sort of like heavy chapter, they are traveling pretty slowly, really. They are just you know, the land is a ripple of dips and crests and stuff, not high enough to be hills. And Elias is not going over them by any stretch of the means. He's refusing that, and they're going in this massive zigzag, making everything very slow. And then Elias is basically just, you know, complaining about it whenever he does talk, but refuses the change and still complains that they're not moving fast enough. So it's definitely, I felt like this was amping up the danger just through this. There's been nothing revealed. We haven't got any, you know, murder or anything chasing, and there's no guys on horses with bows and arrows or anything whatsoever. But just him saying like, okay, well, we can't go the quick way, but I'm going to complain we're moving too slowly, and, you know, we need to go faster and blah, blah, blah. So I definitely felt that,
yeah,
you know, the danger level was being amped up with something so simple as, you know, we need to go faster, but I refuse to go through the faster routes. So,
yeah, I don't know about you, but for me, Elias, right from the start, came across as someone who was very calm, sort of aware, self-aware, and sort of sure of his steps.
Mm-hmm.
And this feels like a change in that, like he's suddenly panicky. Right. And I think that's part of it for me that made it start to feel a lot more intense was, you know, here's someone I thought reacted to things in a very sort of calm, calculating way.
Yeah.
Who is now starting to show signs that he's panicking and not sure what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Which makes it feel a lot worse.
Yeah, he does, you know, he is introduced as a very calm, you know, considered character. You know, he doesn't, you know, it doesn't come across as someone who's very flighty. And then here he is kind of a bit scattered and like, you know, got to do this, got to do that, got to, you know. But yeah, it is a very change, a very large change to his character. So it does add extra pressure to the scene. And even the wolves aren't explaining what's going on to Perrin, so even, you know, Perrin's get a bit freaked out. And this is especially true when we get to some kind of ridge that's, you know, it's like, okay, this is too big to go around. So Elias is crawling up and peering over it, and only after he's very satisfied is he allowing them to follow. You know, Perrin actually follows him one time, and Egwene's like, I'm going to jump off the horse and come with you. And Elias is like, if you can make the horse crawl, yeah, but otherwise, no. Which is fair, because my parents had horses, and you can't make them crawl. You can make them lay down, but that's it. They don't crawl. So
I'm happy that you've tried it and can report back.
I have not tried it. I just know from experience horses, you know, I suppose a horse probably can crawl. It's probably physically possible, but I don't think a horse would understand what you were trying to get them to do, even a very clever one. I think they would just, you know, sort of like hop forward or something. I'm not sure you could actually get them to crawl. And of course, they're large animals. So, you know, when a person lays flat to the ground and crawls, they don't have a very high profile. But when a horse does that, like, it's still going to be pretty tall, isn't it? So you need some big ass grass to hide it. But yeah, there's a fun little real world tidbit there, I suppose, folks. You can't make a horse crawl. But anyway, yeah, so they are sneaking up to the top, and he's right here. It's really, there's a lot of detail here about how careful he's being. You know, we're barely peeking over the top, you know, and Perrin's like, you know, come on, this is a waste of time. He's about to complain. And but then he freezes because, you know, a flock of ravens rise from the trees, the few that are, and they move south as one. And as you've emphasized here, the dark one's eyes. And to the east, more rise from a thicket, wheeling twice before heading south too. And even the wolves aren't seeing them. Like, they're just, it's like they're appearing out of nowhere. And that's because wolves don't look up, Elias says. But yeah, it's pretty freaky that what's going on. Elias says, thank the light that isn't the big a big hunt, he says, even after, but doesn't finish the sentence. So something's happened here, and we don't know what.
And as it kind of then, it ties back, doesn't it, to, well, for me, it ties back again to this previous conversation he's had, and some sort of information that's been shared He knows something or has decided something is true that is shaping his actions, and he's not letting them know what it is.
Yeah. You know, it's a very concerned moment. Elias is like, "That's not even a big amount of birds," which shocks Perrin. But then he's like, "Well, I've seen a thousand in a flock, so you know, this small group here is definitely a small group." But he's worried that the ravens are behind them as well, and so he asks the wolves to come back and check their back trail. And he's like, "Yeah, we got to move some haste because I know somewhere we can be safe, but we need to get there in a hurry." And they call up Egwene and Bella, and they start hustling their way. We get to another crest, and they work their way to the top. And this is where it starts to get a bit, like the danger starts to become a bit real here, I felt back.
Yeah, I'm literally just going to say this bit was where it was like, oh dear.
Yeah. So, why don't you talk us through this bit and what you were thinking when you read about this poor fox?
Oh, it was horrible, frankly. Like, I remember reading this bit and just being like, no, I don't mind. I just. It sort of hammered home that they're in a very bad place right now. So it just, yeah, I don't know. It just, for 1 minute, they're just kind of running, and there's this, they're just waiting on Elias to nudge them along to the next place, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, open field, a small group of trees. For shelter further ahead, no ravens in sight. You can feel like, oh yeah, they're setting this up as like something's gonna happen. And so I'm expecting the ravens to appear on the horizon and them to have to make a mad dash to this corpse of trees. But no, a poor little fox. And in my head, it was like a baby fox. It really was horrible.
That is really sad.
Darts out, and a mass of ravens swarm out of the trees and just start darting in and out, pecking it to death until there's nothing left.
Yeah, if you're not a fan of birds, you're not going to be a fan of this scene. We'll describe it like that because this poor little fox, this Baba fox, as Null is saying, is decimated by these ravens, and all that's left behind is basically a torn mat of fur, and that's a horrible thought. And I've seen roadkill, I've seen foxes hit by cars, and yeah, it's not a pretty sight. I imagine that this is far, far worse than that, and a horrible way to meet your demise. So. Yeah, but this definitely sets up the danger for our characters here because if they get caught in the open by the ravens, like you know, that's not a pretty sight.
Yeah, and I assume this suggests that they don't care about specifically who they're after. But anyone that's out in the open is potentially a target in their patch.
Yeah, kill anything that moves. So.
Yeah, because sure. Well, I mean, obviously, must eat, but. If they're out looking for them, they're just or it's a display of power, but I think it's more likely that they're just gonna eat up anything that gets in their way.
Yeah. So, I mean, they do make a run for the trees. You know, and they are one raven seems to spot them. But it doesn't seem to, you know, they seem to make it to safety in the in that moment because you know, the ravens would have been on them like the fox Elias says if they'd been spotted properly. So, yeah, maybe there was just one wasn't evidence enough. for the rest of them or something. I'm not sure, but they got away with it. But they should be keeping their slings handy just in case. Interesting advice. I'm not sure how much a sling would help you against an actual flock of ravens.
You need to be really quick.
Yeah. Because even if it's something like, you know, 20 ravens, like, that's 20 stones you need on a sling. So, or two of them, 10 stones each. You know, you need to get them each time. Like, it's a lot of work, isn't it? So,
yeah.
But it's better than nothing, isn't it, as well.
Yeah. I don't know. Is it just if you're caught in that situation, are you just fighting for the sake of fighting?
Well, yeah. Some defense is better than no defense, people always say. So, you know, to just lay down and let them have it is a bit. It's not in most people's nature, I would imagine. So, they carry on and, you know, going from one hill to the next, wait for the ravens to move and then they go again. And, you know, we keep seeing more ravens and more signs that they're catching things. We get a rabbit with two more foxes. We get other birds. So they are literally killing anything that moves. And this is when Perrin remembers something that Lan told him, and that is that all the Dark One's creatures delight in killing. And he has a beautiful thought here of, you know, a hill of ravens writhing like maggots over scraps of flesh, which is delightful imagery there. and then the wolves replace that because they've bumped into the ravens. The wolves are trying to dodge and snap and all that, but... you know, it's not really enough. The ravens do luckily swoop up and away, because wolves will last a bit longer than foxes, it seems. And the ravens do have a mission, and the wolves are not their mission. So although they are killing anything that moves, we are getting a moment here that says they have a goal in mind, and they can only be distracted by random killing so much, it seems.
Yeah, they don't like it if it fights back.
Yeah, put up too much of a fight and it's like, this is not worth it. I'm going to go. You've chewed too many of us out of the air, I suppose. But, yeah, still not good. Hopper's, we've got Wind with a puncture to his left leg. Hopper's eye has been injured. And Dapple, despite her own injuries, rallies them and they settle into a painful lope after the ravens with blood matting their fur, so... A lot of fight in these wolves, which is good. You know, I feel like if you're going to have some scouts helping you out, then, you know, it's going to be, you know, strong ones are helpful.
Yeah, how long before they're like, you know what, these humans are not worth siding with, are they?
I don't know. Like, are they going to do that? They might do. I mean, they would do that to Perrin and Egwene, it seems, but would they do that to Elias?
I don't think so. But I mean, come on, surely at some point you'd be like, you know what, it's not worth it, is it?
Yeah, I'm just gonna hunker down here in this hole and let you all die, and then like I'll go on with my life. It is, you know, it's worth considering. You know, there's only so much people can put up with, so, and that includes the wolves in this case, I would say. We do carry on. You know, Perrin's looking to Elias, and, you know, he can see that he knows, but he's not saying anything. He's waiting for Perrin to speak and to admit his connection. Which Perrin does. He's like, you know, ravens behind us. And this is where Egwene kind of realizes, you know, you can talk to them. You know, and Perrin, he just kind of accepts the truth. He's, you know, he's tired. He's defeated in that moment. And Egwene's like, you need to get in the saddle. You need to take a moment for yourself. So she runs alongside until Perrin dismounts. And then he's like, right, you get back on. And, you know, because you're too tired. And they're basically just taking turns to run as long as they can so the other one can rest. And off they go, with Elias forcing them on. And the tempo is really high at this stage. The pressure is a lot. You know, they're basically saying, like, how long before the ravens are back on us? And it's like, you've got like an hour, which is, you know, not a lot of time when you're running, and you don't know how far you've got to run specifically, or at least they don't. Elias does. And this is where Perrin starts to get a little... He starts to think about what might happen. And it gets, I don't know, pretty dark here for me. So I don't know what you think of his thoughts here about Egwene. and what would happen if they got caught by the Ravens, and what he might consider doing, which is killing Egwene to save her.
I think when I read this, I just glossed over it.
Okay.
I sort of thought about it a little bit, but it wasn't until the conversation with Elias that it brought it back to me, and then I thought about it again. And I think Perrin is feeling sort of, he's starting to feel the overwhelming sort of feeling of lost, being lost, isn't he? He's starting to feel like he's not sure what's going to happen, and he's not sure that they'll make it. And I think he's trying to, but he is, he's trying to protect her, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's just seen this fox get spawn to bloody scraps, and they've got the Ravens coming up their back now. Indeed. And he's trying to work out whether he should offer her, obviously not now sort of thing, but you know, if it comes to that, would he try and save her the suffering? Which I think is kind of, you know, it's not a good thing, but it's probably, what's the word? It would take a lot of balls to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite an interesting interesting is not the right word. It's a scary situation to be in, but it would take a huge strength of character to consider, you know, killing your childhood friend to save them the pain of a gruesome death by Raven.
Yeah.
Says a lot about a parent in my book.
I think the after effects say a lot about him as well.
Mm-hmm.
It kept, that's the reason it brought it back to me, was because when I was reading later on, the way of that thought in itself affects him is huge.
Indeed. So, well, we will dive into those after effects in a second, because just as you know, these thoughts are going through Perrin's head, we do have a moment where the Ravens seem to vanish, and we get a chill run down Perrin's spine, and he's feeling different, but he can't say why. You know, Gawain's like, "I'm feeling strange," and Elias is, you know, he's like, "Yes," you know, he's got a gleam in his eye, and you know, he laughs a bit, and he's like, "We found safety. That's what we've done. We've reached somewhere the Ravens will not go. Trollocs wouldn't go unless driven by a Murdrel. And even then, it will take something huge to drive them to to go here. And I said I wouldn't come here either, because the source is cut off." And we're noticing some, you know, greener landscape. You know, not that many. The fewer weeds. And something about this place reminds him of something, but he can't remember what. Egwene doesn't like it and asks what it is. And Elias tells him it's a steading. You know, do not listen to the stories. There may not have been ogre here in 3,000 years, but it's the steading that makes the ogre, not the other way around. And you're like, but don't remember those stories. What's an ogre, Rob? I don't think we've had these stories explained to us or given to us. But you will get some explanation of ogre in this book. So you won't have to wait too long, hopefully. But that's all I'm going to give you. If it was like six books away, I might give you a tidbit, but you know, it's this book. We get some ogre exposition, so we'll call it that. But you know, we're kind of in a place of safety now. We found somewhere the Ravens aren't going to chase us. We're safe from you know, the piercing beaks and obviously the death that would follow that. But we do sneak in a bit further. We need to hide away, Elias says, you know, because they're going to see us from the outside. Just because they won't come in doesn't mean they can't see us. And Perrin's like, well, we could just stay here until everything's good, can't we? And he's like, well, yeah, if you can eat grass, because that's all there is. But, you know, they head off a couple of miles to get into the center of where they're going for where the water source is. And, you know, it's clear that as they get further in, things are, you know, things are doing better here. Like, you know, life is sustaining itself a bit better. Things are greener. It's not quite as bad as the land outside. And yeah, so what do you think of this setting that we've gotten into here?
Interesting, and just you reading that bit out there makes me think that okay, so this place is protected from magic, isn't it?
Yes, you can't use the one power in a setting.
And because of that, is unaffected by whatever dark sort of happenings are causing the land to suffer.
Is
Which
this? Oh, sorry, go.
all it means for me is that it just sort of highlights that whatever is happening to the land is an effect caused by the Dark One.
Right.
Some sort of magic, because if it's not affecting here, it means it's magic.
Okay.
Or it would affect here as well, in my head anyway.
I'm gonna put that in the theory section at the end, or the prediction section, sorry. You know, the land is being affected by bad magic, bad juju.
Yeah, that to me is logical.
Okay, yeah.
I'm happy to be proven wrong, but yeah, if whatever is happening out there isn't happening here, it means that it's something different, and the only thing that can't come in here is magic. So to me, that means that the thing that is affecting outside is magic,
Okay.
and if it's bad, it surely wouldn't be good.
Fair point, fair point. Is this the safety you thought they might head to? Because obviously, you know, Elias is like, I know a place and we need to get there quick. Did you have any thoughts on what that might be when you were reading that? Is this what, you know, when you got here, you were like, well, this is the last thing I possibly expected, or like, oh, a magic space that saves them. This is kind of like, this makes sense. Like, how, you know, in terms of what they were running towards, did you have any idea or inkling? And when you found this, what did you think? You know, like, were you like, this is better than I expected, not as good as I expected, lame, you know?
No, I didn't really know what to expect. I kind of had assumed that it would be a location rather than a empty space.
Right.
I think I kind of assumed it would be somewhere more like what I expect him to frequent. So, like, you know, somewhere a bit more wild. No, and by that I mean like, I guess kind of what I see wolves going to in sort of fantasy settings, like caves and like or forests, or you know, somewhere like hidden.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting a sort of an area that for some reason the ravens won't go into and trollocs and stuff don't like. Is there any mention of how big this area is? Because I don't think it says it in the book.
No, there's no specific mention of how big the area specifically is, although Elias does mention that they need to go, I think, like another mile or two into it to find the water source and you know, where they're gonna sort of settle for the time being. That will obviously be out of sight of ravens as well. So by that definition, even if that was only to the center, you know, it's got a diameter of. Is that right? Diameter? Radius, the whole thing, and diameter is the. No. Radius is from the center to the edge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's 4 miles across. going off that. If it was just, it's got to be at least 4 miles across, you think, if they're going to the center. He doesn't specifically say it's the center, but logic kind of says that. But yeah, a few miles in width is the minimum I would, you know, just from that sentence there, I would suggest. But there's no actual, like, this is, you know, 6 miles squared or anything like that. So we don't get an actual size for it, annoyingly. But, you know, it's clearly got a decent amount of size to it, judging by the fact that they've entered it and there's still another 2 miles to go to where they want to be. So a mile is not, you know, a 2 second trip. So, but, you know, when they get there, we have a little bit of a, you know, there's Egwene's beginning cheerfully, you know, about, you know, where they've ended up with the cold spring water and stuff. But Perrin is in a very somber mood because a voice in his head does remind him that he contemplated cutting down Egwene to save her from the worst end. And it's not the Dark One mocking him in this situation, like in his dreams. It's himself being like, dude, you know, you considered this. So he's very much drawing in on himself right now to think about this choice he considered.
Yeah. I think this is the point where I first started thinking about it. He's bullying himself for caring, which I find weird.
Yeah.
He cares enough that he was worried about how her life would end. And he hadn't planned. He wasn't like, you know, he wasn't stood behind her with the axe, like, eyeing up her neckline.
No, he was not doing that. That's true.
You know, he was thinking about, you know, if these ravens get to us, and this is, you know, the two options, the two outcomes, the swift end is possibly better. And could I or would I do it?
Yeah.
And then he's immediately sort of bullying himself about it.
It's very true. Yeah, he is very hard on himself for it. Personally, just speaking just for myself, I consider it the right call to have considered, you know, for that moment. Because, you know, if you're going to die, you know, who... It's like, who wants to be having it drawn out and, in effect, you know, some form of torture or, like, multiple stabbing as opposed to one quick, you know, beheading in a single swipe? Like, I know which one I'd prefer if it was happening to me. Yeah. So, but it's a tough thing to consider.
I cannot imagine doing it, like... I cannot imagine being brave enough to be like, no, I think... this is how I should shorten the suffering.
Mm.
I don't think I'd have the strength to do it.
Agreed.
I would rather someone make that call if the options are have small sections of your skin and flesh pulled away, like by hundreds of birds, or... a swift end. I think I'd be dancing for the swift end, but
yeah.
So I think it shows a strength within Perrin,
mm-hmm.
that he's clearly not really aware that he's got.
It's a very somber part of the chapter, but. And a very important one for Perrin's character, I felt, so.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, while he's brooding away there, bullying himself, as we're describing it, Egwene does notice that where they've decided to have their fire, Elias breaking his rule there, you know, she's basically like, this stone looks like a giant eye. And we get a bit of exposition here of a previous High King, Arthur Hawkwing, although you've put Arthur Hawkeye in the notes here, so we're just going to call him Hawkeye.
Okay.
Which I like, so... and he's like, this is all that's left of his power. So Hawkeye almost ruled the world. People were very safe, but, you know, he did conquer it by the sword. But if you went against him or did something that was wrong, the punishment was very harsh. And he decided that he needed to lay siege to Tarvalon, and he did that for 20 years and put a price on every Aes Sedai's head. Which Elias, like, you know, the guy was a fool, you know, because he was, when he was dying at the end of it, and Aes Sedai could have healed him from his sickness and poisoning, but he had them all locked up in the city and a giant army holding them back, so they couldn't come and save him. You know, he hated them as much as he hated the Dark One. And Egwene's like, okay, well, that's cool, but, you know, what's that got to do with his big eye being here? And Elias is like, well, you know, the common people loved Hawkeye. And this is fitting. We've got his big eye there, and now I'm calling him Hawkeye. This is very fitting. I like it. Yeah. So he was very good to the common people, and he's like, this is where I'm going to build my capital, you know, somewhere to, you know, it's going to be a safe civilization away from outside sources. And the commoners were like, okay, we're going to build you a big statue. You know, it took 5 years, and you know, but we put it here, so where the city's going to be. But there was no statue, no city built, because on the day it was finished, was the day he died, and his sons and blood fought over who would rule, and eventually none of his kin were left, and any of the books were evidence except stories, mostly wrong, because all the actual books and such were burnt, and his glory came to nothing. And the fighting didn't even stop there, because everyone's like, you know, I've got some soldiers, I want the throne, and we get the Hundred Year War, or is classic in history, a war that's called 100 years and then lasts longer or shorter, in this case 123 years. And, you know, most of the history is lost to burning and just people ripping up all the different places. And I want this piece, I'll have that piece. And, you know, the statue was probably taken down because nobody wanted to be measured against it. And, you know, we get a lot of exposition here about Hawkeye. And the chapter ends there with Elias being like, you know, have some more tea and then, you know, I'm going to put the fire out. So, what did you think after all this dramatic beginning and very somber moment with Perrin? We then finished on an exposition of an ancient High King. So I'm curious what you thought about that.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a roller coaster. I think the length of the chapter as well made it feel almost like it was a separate chapter.
Yeah.
It felt like there was a divide there. Yeah, it ramped up very quickly at the beginning, and I kind of felt like something bad was going to happen. And I suppose the bad thing was that Perrin kind of begins to doubt himself for his decision to sort of think about that. They then get to this place. And I mean, I'm still confused as to how it's disconnected from everything, but
yeah,
they kind of reach this place where there's this sort of legend of someone who was trying to bring everyone together. And I found it, the interesting thing I found about the story is that, you know, despite him being about the people and making an even law that kind of it's fair to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he's out of the way, all of those around and under him, it just turns into chaos.
Yeah.
And I was thinking like, well, is that because people are inherently greedy, or was it not actually working?
Right. Well, I'm trying to think, do we get more on that later on in the books? I think you kind of get bits, but yeah, not a whole lot. Hawkeye does, you know, he appears here and there, mostly people reference him and stuff like that, and, you know, his empire and so on and so forth. So, but I don't think we get a lot of specifics, so to speak. But, you know,
it sounds less of like a peace bringer and more like a, you know, peace bringer, how we use that term to sort of talk about sort of ancient leaders,
right,
that brought together a couple of empires or whatever into one and then ruled across all of them.
Yeah.
And people liked them because they built infrastructure and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It yeah, kind of almost feels more like that than an actual, like, person who really cared. It was just they're very good at controlling everything.
Well, I mean, there is something to say for someone who, you know, I mean, the Romans, you know, were not the well, no civilization is great, but you know, the Romans were not great in a lot of the ways, but they did put down a lot of roads and make a lot of places accessible to other places, and you know, that made them very successful. So.
In the words of Monty Python, what have the Romans ever done for us?
Oh God. We haven't had a Monty Python reference for quite some while, so we did have one a couple of times, but it's been quite a while since we had one, so nice to fit that in. Is there Sorry, go for it.
I'm just going to say I'm really annoyed that it's for I don't remember putting it as Arthur and Hawkeye, but Hawkeye for some reason is the one of the characters in MASH, which I absolutely love,
Oh
and
wow.
so I'll take that.
Nice. I was genuinely thinking of Jeremy Renner from the MCU. So, but yeah, Arthur Hawkwind did not carry a bow and arrow. We do find out his weapon of choice at some point later on, and yeah, bow and arrow was not his weapon of choice. So if he was played by Jeremy Renner, I don't think that would fit in with his skill set. Was there anything else about this chapter that we haven't spoken about that you wanted to dive into?
No, so my 2 points, I think the first one we've kind of covered really, haven't we?
Yeah.
I mean the second one, it was just a question really of, you know, talking about a place where the connection's lost, and I just thought, well, perhaps it's the reason the Dark One's minions don't like going in there, because they rely upon sort of the Dark One sort of, I don't know if he's controlling them, but he is communicating or using them as his eyes or
Yeah, you've put him to the
to.
Dark One's minions fear it because they lose their connection to him. So
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you think that they're all, you know, not just like, okay, so, you know, I'm a gang leader, I've got my gang members, and, you know, they come and report to me once in a while, but I don't know what they're up to 24/7 because I don't have a, you know, a mental connection to them or something. Are you suggesting the Dark One does to all its minions have some form
But
of
there
connection?
was mention of the ravens being his eyes, wasn't there?
Yes.
I'm not sure. I think that that literally means he is looking through their eyes constantly, but there's some sort of communication running there.
Gotcha.
And I don't imagine every time they want to say something to him, they fly, you know, 1,000 miles to wherever to just have a natter, and then, all right,
It's
I'll
a
go
long
back and
journey, yeah.
check on that for you. Yeah. So I was thinking that there's some form of connection, and if that is lost, then they are perhaps they feel weakened by that, or they're scared of losing it
Right.
for whatever reason.
Gotcha. Okay. So yeah, very different two chapters, these ones. Bit of lunch in a town that's had a fire and you know, a decision to chase after one person over another, and then a very, you know, high-paced, high drama, high-stakes chase scene between three people, a horse and some ravens. And then some exposition about a very old High King. So, yeah. But this is that's chapter 29 we've covered now, and you're only on. Are you up to? Have you read any more? You're still on chapter 33.
No, 33.
You're still on 33, which means we are within three chapters of where you are. I don't think we've done that since you started reading.
No, I don't think so.
This is impressive. So, I'm excited. As long as it's not another 6 months before we record again. So,
I'm 45.
yeah, let's not do that. So, but no, this has been good. I'm excited. Our next chapter is, because I scroll through, Children of Shadow. It looks like you've made a fair amount of notes on this. So, this is, in fact, there's a lot of notes here actually scrolling through it. So, yeah, the
But
next
this
one can.
again is another, this is a big chapter again. This
Yeah.
was not necessarily for length, but for things that go on.
Yeah,
exactly. There was a lot of detail.
Mm-hmm. So next time we will be recording that. That might end up being an episode where we do just a single chapter. I'm sure that's going to happen at times because there'll be lots we want to talk about. It might not be. We might go through it and be like, okay, here's all the notes. No more to add. You never know. So, but yeah, folks, if you want to, I keep talking about these notes. If you're not familiar with them, Null just sit down and summarizes the chapters and puts his notes in and does that in a doc that we share. And that's what I use when I reference talking through, because I want to talk about how Null is experiencing the story rather than me just summarize, a wiki or something like that. I want to talk about the bits that he's finding relevant enough to put down and talk about. You can get access to read this if you're interested, if you just join the Patreon. So just at the base level, £1 a month. Yeah, £1 a month. I had to think, did I say that in pounds or dollars? It's £1 a month. You can join the Patreon and you can get access to Null's notes, and you can get heads up on what I'm up to. I usually drop in little hints or little, I'm doing this week, or so on and so forth. And obviously there's other levels where you can get earlier access to a podcast and YouTube videos and other bits and pieces. If you want to support what I do and help me get to the stage where I can do more of it, because obviously I have to juggle this around doing a regular job, which we all have to do, have to pay the bills. But yeah, if you want to join in and support that and join the family and have some fun, you can head over to patreon.com/MalkyrieTalks for that. And you can find everything that I do, including MalkyrieCon, at MalkyrieTalks.com. Where you'll find all the information for the YouTube the YouTube channel, where I do multiple things. And there's a section for MalkyrieCon and What a Holiday and the other bits and pieces I do as one-off events throughout the year. And if you want to check out Null on Twitter for his erratic, irrelevant tweeting, as I believe he described it the other day, then you just need to go to @null_void. And you will find his delightful bee emblem and the picture of Takane out for a walk with the cat.
I have tweeted again. I have tweeted again. Oh. We're almost up to one every week.
Oh, wow. What did you tweet? Tell us, sir.
I tweeted, you can't make a cow crawl.
A cow? Do you mean a horse?
Yeah. Horse, sorry. I don't know whether I'm a cow, actually. I could have had a cow, who knows?
Yeah, that's brilliant. Right, that should be our thing. You should tweet every time we record something bizarre from the recording. And then folks can listen and line them up and be like, why did you just tweet that? Ah, well, you need to go listen to the podcast recording. You'll find out why. I'm not going to remember that, but it could be fun if I do remember that. So.
I will try and remember that, because I'm sure we say something ridiculous every time.
We do, yes. I think I might title this recording, Lunch by the River and Lunch by the River with Hawkeye or something like that, because that's kind of what we've gotten up to. But yeah. It's not been as long as a recording as usual. We're just over an hour and 10 minutes. So we usually go a bit longer than that, but we had a nice snappy chapter 28. So thanks for joining me, Noel. I appreciate your time twice this week. It's been appreciated.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Always welcome. Especially if you've got nothing better to do, because you're stuck in your room thanks to that blasted COVID. Because you're being good and not trying to infect your roommates and others. So... you're a responsible young man.
Well, late at night, I go out and lick up the surfaces. So,
when you see kids, they lean up to the window and they do that, sort of like put their mouth on the window and then blow so their cheeks expand. Yeah, I've just got visions of you doing that around all the kitchen counters and shit now. That's brilliant. I love it. What a fun note to finish on. Folks, hope you're not out there all licking the kitchen sides like Null is, but it's good. It's a fun image. So we will see you next time, folks. Thanks for joining us. And until then, may you always find water and shade.